We are, as I mentioned, looking at the night before the crucifixion. We're the events leading up to the crucifixion, burial, and resurrection. And last week, it'd be good if I turn that on, we were looking at what happened after the arrest in the garden and leading forward to Friday's mock trial. Now, he'll go through a series of mock trials before he's actually executed. But as we were looking last week, we were diving into Peter. Now, one of the things I am fascinated with, and I know this is a lot of information that's kind of getting thrown at us, but I think as we take time to consider each element of these, is looking at Jesus as the main character, but then looking at all the lives being affected around him. So as he's going through these awful events, we also see how the others in his scope of influence are also going through a lot. One of those is Peter. You may remember a few weeks ago, we were looking at how after the events of the Passover meal, as they were traveling to the garden to pray, you know, Peter is so confident in his willingness to do whatever it took to defend Jesus. You remember he makes that famous statement where he says, if all these others, he's assuming the other apostles, even if they all betray you, I won't, right? I'm going to be there. And what's Jesus' response?
Before that cock crows, you'll deny me three
times. Yeah, and so you have a man who feels one way, but is, Jesus understands what's going to happen is not going to play out the way Peter believes it will. So as you go into the garden after the prayer and they come to arrest him, you know, it's Peter that is the one who brings the sword out and cuts off Malchus's ear. He's prepared for battle. Again, but what he wasn't prepared for was what? Submission. What's that now?
Put it away.
Yeah. Jesus says, you stop that. You see that you stop that. Put your sword away. He who lives by the sword will also die by the sword. He heals Malchus's eel. That's a fish. That's not a body part. An ear. And what's the response after that of the disciples? What do? They run away, every one of them. It's just Jesus and those soldiers. Peter was one of those guys who ran away. Now, just a few hours ago, he was saying, hey, I'm ready to die for you. And now, things have changed. So Jesus is arrested, but does Peter go totally away? Yeah, so the Gospels tell us that he follows, but at a distance. Now, as we were looking last week, where does Jesus go? Where is he taken first? To the home of Annas. He goes to Annas' home first. If you just look at there on the board, your clue. He goes to Annas' home first. Now, Peter is there. And remember, he's outside. We're going to come back to that. But just keep that in mind. The first place he goes to is Annas' home. And then after he has his confrontation with Annas, they then send him where? Caiaphas' home, right? Who's the actual technical high priest. And so just keep that all in mind. So that's the train of events. All the while, Peter's there. And he's following, but he's kind of hiding. Well, he's really hiding. And he's just wanting to be there amongst everybody. All right, so let's go to Matthew 26. Now, each of the Gospels in this instance really give us different accommodating details, but not all the details. None of them give us all of the details in their account. All right, so we really do need to look at each of them. And see how they give us additional things from one another. So if we go to Matthew first, Matthew really gives us a good kind of broad overview of what occurs with Peter. So somebody read 69 through 75, please. Who wants
now
to read?
Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. "You also were with Jesus of Galilee," she said. But he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. Then he went out to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him, and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." He denied it again with an oath, "I don't know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." And he went outside and wept bitterly.
All right, so Matthew really gives us the, kind of the bare bones facts of what's going on. So you've got Peter, who's outside, who's trying to be kind of adjacent and near where Jesus is. And what Matthew doesn't exactly tell us is where he is. Now, just keep that in mind. He just says he's in the courtyard, but he doesn't tell us whose courtyard. Just keep that in mind. So he lays out. He's standing out there, and there's a servant girl who notices him. And what does she notice in particular about him?
Speech.
His speech. What about his speech?
Accent.
Yeah, and he has a Galilean accent. I guess I should have brought the map out. But you remember the map of Jerusalem? Like the Judean map. You've got Jerusalem down here. And then you've got Samaria. And then what's up here? Galilee. Right? And that's where Jesus... That's where he grew up. That's where he spent a great deal of his ministry, right? He, one of the things that you can note from this is they had discernible accents. We know something about that. You go north and you notice a difference in the way, if you're a native North Carolinian or native Kentuckian like me, you get out of your area and what do you notice? Well, people say the same words, but they have different inflections in their voice, right? It sounds a little bit different.
We always refer to that as a southern drawl.
A southern drawl, right? That's what you have in Carolina. In Kentucky, you have an out hillbilly accent, right? We say stuff like, instead of, what time is it? Well, it's the 8 o'clock hour. We say hour, right? We say stuff like that. We take vowels out. And we'll just take anything out if we don't really like it. But he has a discernible accent. She knows it, Galilean. It also infers something for her to pick him out. What does that say about him and amongst all these people?
His speech is...
You think everybody there is Galilean? You think anybody else there is Galilean? I don't know. But... He's speaking different enough. She notices him above everybody else. So it seems to me to imply that there's not a lot of Galileans out there where he's at. And she's heard him talk. And she says, "You sound very different." And she knows. She says, "You sound like a Galilean." So what else do you know about the context here? How is Peter changing as he's continuing to be questioned?
I think partially he's panicking.
Okay, panicking.
Because he hasn't even thought yet about what Jesus actually said to him. What he's thinking is, you know, how do they know who I am? You know, I don't want to get caught either. And so he denies, well, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell he's becoming a lot more anxious. And it comes out as anger, but I think it's really fear. As it's going along, did you want to say something?
Before? He's close enough that he can make eye contact with Jesus.
Oh, don't jump ahead.
Oh,
no, you're right. You're exactly right. You hold that in mind. Hold that in mind. We'll go to Luke. And Luke lets us know that he is kind of close by. All right, so Each time he seems he's more vehement in his denials. So that kind of goes through Matthew. So let's go to Mark 14. And we won't read the whole thing. I just want to notice a couple of differences. Matthew and Mark are pretty close in detail, but there are a couple details that I want to note that Mark gives us that Matthew doesn't. If you go to Mark 14, again, Mark 14, 66, you know, you've got Peter there. He's standing beside this this fire. And he's warming himself. Again, they notice the way he's talking. This time, there's a different term used, but it relates to the same thing. What do they call him here?
Nazarene.
Nazareth is in Galilee. That's why it's Nazarene. But I do want to note 68. So, in 68, what's the first part of that verse tell us? What's he doing? He's denying. It's his first denial, right? His first denial. And then what happens? Mark likes numbers. What's that? The rooster crowed. Now that's something Matthew he doesn't really get that much detail. But Mark goes to the trouble of giving us the extra detail that as he gives the first denial, what happens? The rooster crows. Just keep that in mind. That's important when looking at Mark. So he denies, rooster crows. Verse 69, the servant girl again comes. And now she's not talking to him, but what is she doing? She's telling the other people. She's becoming a real nuisance for Peter. He can't get away from her. Now she's trying to stir up other people. And then what's Peter's response? Verse 70. Somebody read 70.
But again he denied it. And after a little while, the bystanders were again saying to Peter, "Surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean too."
So he denies it, but they don't believe him. And so they're pushing harder on him to the point to where he lays out a curse. Now, he's not cursing like we think of curse words, right? What is he doing when it says he's laying out a curse?
Probably
shouting.
It's like a vehement oath, kind of.
Yeah. You ever heard the phrase, "Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay"? Why did they bring that? Why does James and Jesus bring that up? Because sometimes what would people have to do to get other people to believe them?
They would swear upon an object or they probably didn't even know.
Yeah. So it's some kind of vehement, like, "Believe me, you know, this is why you should believe me." He's doing that. And so he's emphatically saying, "I am not..." Let's see. Verse 71, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." So he is doing everything he can to convince them, "I'm not one of his disciples." This is interesting what Mark does. After he invokes that curse and then says, "I am not one of his, I do not know the man," what happens in 72? So now you have the rooster crowed the first time and now a second time. And it's just right after it. The text says, "Immediately the rooster crowed a second time, and Peter remembered how Jesus had said to him, 'Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times.' And he broke down and wept." So Mark is the one that gives us it. He's the only one that gives us that. He adds that element of, not only did Jesus say, "You'll deny me three times," but what? "Before the rooster crows three times, you will have denied me three times." And so Mark is really bringing out the rooster crowing and he's reflecting on it, and all that's to bring back to Peter's mind, remember what I told you. And so that's Mark's account. He adds those elements there that you've got this rooster crowing, interweaving with the denials. Now, I want you to keep that in mind as we're moving through these, and as the details are, we're getting more details as we go into Luke and John. So, and we'll put them all together. Let's go to Luke 22. Luke 22. Again, I won't read the whole thing, but I want to note a few things that Luke gives us. Now, Luke, the way he writes is different, isn't it? He's at times very detail-oriented. And you notice what he does. Go down to 55. It says, when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking close at him. Now you get a little different detail here with Luke's account. Not only does she hear him, but what does she do now? She looks. Now it's not just hearing, but it's appearance. So she's not just noting the way he sounds, but the way he looks. Looking closely at him, this man also was with him. Now, Luke doesn't give us the detail about the voice, but he does note that Peter had a certain appearance, that he was noted to be somebody with Jesus, probably implying that being from Galilee, you just looked a little different than you did from Jerusalem. Something about the appearance was there. Now, I don't know what it was, but something she saw noted in her mind. This man's here. Huh?
Or she could have just seen
them
together.
And maybe that's it. Maybe she saw them earlier in the week. You know, Jesus been coming to the temple every day. It could be that. But she does make this connection between Jesus and Peter in appearance. Now, whether it was that she saw them together earlier or if she's noting something particular about him, I don't know what it was. But there is some evaluation based on appearance. So she again, the text affirms that she's noting him as being a disciple of Jesus. Again, he denied it. Verse 57. A little while later, someone else. So this is a detail that the other ones don't really emphasize. But here, Luke says, okay, you don't just have the servant girl, but now you've entered another person. Also notes that they've seen him. Maybe it was one of those that she was trying to convince was with him. This one said, you are also one of them. But Peter said, man, I am not. Now, verse 59 tells us what?
After an
interval of about an hour. So Luke actually gives us a little bit of a time reference. When this isn't just something that happened in 10 minutes, but this is a long period. Just keep that in mind as we go forward into John. But Luke's mentioning that that this was an extended time that Peter has been out there with these people as they've taken note of him. Again, you'll say another person insisted, saying, certainly this man also was with him for what? Again, noting his association with being a Galilean and putting him with Jesus. Again, Peter said, man, I do not know what you're talking about. And immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And this is the detail Ms. Florence was mentioning. This kind of gives us a little bit of an idea of how close Jesus and Peter were, because Luke says at that moment, so you've got a couple things happening. If we start to put these together from Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you've got the rooster crowing the first time, after the first denial. Then after the second one, you have the rooster crow a second time. So as the rooster crows, or right after it, then Luke says that Peter and the Lord's eyes met one another. I've always wondered what that must have felt like, how low Peter was in that moment. And all of a sudden, all of that comes together for Peter, right? And he makes all that connection going all the way back to the on their way to the always goes back to the Passover. Remember when Jesus was talking about one of y'all are a traitor, right? All this has been kind of leading up to this, and it all connects for Peter. Before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. He went out and wept bitterly, right? So that's Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the Synoptic Gospels. Well, John gives us even more information. All right, so go to John chapter 18. And I noticed something I've never noticed before. I don't know, maybe you have, but this was new to me. I had never really thought about this. John 18, and let's read verse 15. Somebody read 15 through 18, please.
And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known to the high priest, and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known to the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then said the damsel that kept the door to Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He said, I am not. And the servant and the officer stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus.
Well, that's enough there. So, where are we, by the way? Whose courtyard? Which high priest? This is Annas' courtyard. I never realized this before. We're at Annas' home. We're going to go to Caiaphas's later. But one thing that connected in my mind, I had never put the connection with, was the first questioning of Peter did not happen at Caiaphas's home. Again, note again, Luke adds that detail of about an hour passes. To me, that makes sense. I mean, now that I think about this, there's a lot going on here all around Peter. So he's come into the courtyard of Annas. That's where the girl notices his speech and says, are you, yeah, you're one of, she not only notices speech, but what else did we note from Mark's account or from Luke's account? She looked at him closely. So she's noticed his appearance and the way he talks, and she has identified him correctly as being one of the disciples of Jesus. This starts at Annas' house. Now, one of the other kind of neat things to note here, one of the interesting things is, while he's standing there watching and while he's being questioned about his following Jesus, while he's being very anxious about all of this, what's going on with the high priest and Jesus? What's Annas asking Jesus about in verse 19? He questioned him about his disciples. Now, I don't know if Peter heard that or not, but can you imagine if you hear what's going on? And at the same time, you've got a servant girl saying, hey, you're one of the guys. I'm actually kind of surprised he didn't run away.
Who was the other one that went in with it? Does it say anywhere?
It doesn't say when we're going through this. My assumption is it's John, but that is clearly an assumption. John always talks about himself in the third person. And that's why my assumption is it's John. But I do not know that for a fact. John does not identify the disciple by name. But that's my interpretation of who it is. But in the end, it doesn't really affect the text in any way, whether you know him or not. But you see Peter, this is all occurring over a long period. So he's sitting there, the servant girl's asking him about his identity. At the same time, the high priest is questioning Jesus about his disciples. All right, all that's going on. Go on down to verse 25. This just blew my mind. Again, I had not read, I'd not studied this before. But let's read 25 through 27. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So that's the details we've had from the other Gospels. But notice this. So they said to him, "You also are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, notice this, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter again denied it, and at once the rooster crowed. So he's there, and he's being questioned. He's hearing what's going on with the high priest and Jesus. And then one of the ones questioning him was in the garden. Not only that, it is a relative of Malchus. Wow. Now all of that has to be exploding in the mind of Peter. As all this is going on, you think it's a man who felt the weight of the world on his shoulders?
Yeah, he probably saw the guy too and said to himself, "I remember seeing this guy."
How am I going to get out of this?
Yeah.
Well, what does he do after this? He runs away, right? He runs out and weeps bitterly. He's like, "I got to get out of it." So at the same time, at the same moment, what all do you have going on? You've got him denying Jesus, the rooster's crowing, already crowed once. Now he's denied him the third time after being questioned over and over again. And this has gone on for a while, at least an hour, probably longer. He denies him the third time. The rooster crows a second time. At the same moment, he looks in and makes eye contact with Jesus. All while the person questioning him was the cousin of the guy whose ear he cut off. Wow. Imagine being Peter for a moment. That's a lot to take in and comprehend. And so
the high priest knew too. It said the high priest
Knew the other disciple, did not know Peter.
No, it said that he was familiar. Did it say he was familiar? The high priest
with the other guy. With, I assume it's John, but I could be wrong. Whatever disciple brought Peter into Annas's house was known by Annas. Now it doesn't mention that he was known necessarily by Caiaphas, which by the end of it, we're at Caiaphas' home. Any other, just amazing, right? Any other comments?
Well, I was just thinking that a couple of things. I think right up until this moment that not just Peter, but the other disciples are all having these big problems, because remember, all along they thought that Jesus was going to be their king and he was going to lead them into battle. And then the last straw to some of them was when Peter cut that guy's ear off and Jesus said, "No, give me your sword. We're not doing it that way." And he puts the guy's ear back on and the disciples just run. And I think that at that point, up until then, they did not understand what Jesus was really doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was later on when they actually had the evidence of the fact that, "Oh, by the way, I'm alive again," that's when it clicked.
Well, and Jesus explains this earlier in John. So if you go back to John 14, as Jesus, you remember he begins that chapter by saying, you believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's home, there are many rooms, mansions, some translations have, but it's many rooms. If I go away, I will come again to receive you to where I am, right? And then he goes on to say, I am the way, the truth, and life. All that's kind of based on the difficulties of what they're experiencing in chapter 13, which is the anxiety of Jesus talking about leaving us. Where is he going? If you go on into chapter 14, what does he explain? He says, I'm going away, but what's coming? The Holy Spirit, the Comforter. And later in John 14, he explains that it's to your benefit that I go away, because when I go away, the Holy Spirit will come, and what will he do? Guide you into all truth. Now, he just said right before that, there are many other things I have to teach you, but you're not ready. And so it kind of goes to this idea of what Dwayne's mentioning is, they don't get it. What I also think is fascinating, and we could do this with each of the disciples of what knowledge we have, they all are kind of going through a lot. Think about John, right? John also left Jesus in the garden. John, his closest friend, John, the same man that he's going to leave in his mother in the care of, was a man who also ran away. And now I believe is still, I think he's with Peter following all of this. He's kind of going through a lot of that. You think about Judas and what he's going through. We'll talk about him in a minute, what we know of his journey. But think about where he is in this moment. We'll come back to that. So there's a lot there.
I was just going to say, and to me, Peter, if he was going to sneak around and do this, why didn't he keep his mouth shut? Just blend in. But he must have been talking and doing all, because all these people are going, oh yeah, you talk just like a Galilean. And you look like one. You'd think he would have kind of said, okay, everybody's looking for me, so if I'm going to do this, I'm going to blend in. But it's like,
But I will say one thing about that, and I was thinking about that too, but I don't know that he had to say very much.
True.
You can pick up on somebody's accent with a few words. And also we do know that the girl doesn't just hear him, but what? She notes his appearance. Plus the relative of Malchus also doesn't note his speech, but notes, I saw you in the garden, didn't I?
Sure remember seeing him.
So we're not given how much conversation he was involved in. I can't imagine it was very much, but it was enough that some of them said, hey, we know you're from Galilee. It's too early for that bell. All right, good question. Any others? Yeah, turn.
Think about it, our God's a forgiving God, because after Peter denied him, he's basically one of the ones that had the keys of the kingdom. He ushered in right there at Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 10. The Gentile conversion as well. And so, if he would, it just proved that God kept his word.
Yeah, and kind of, we're going to come back to that later after the resurrection and talk about Peter. But do you remember, what did Jesus say? And I need to find the right account. It'd take me a minute to find it. But one of the gospel writers, and I'm not going to guess which one, but one of them lets us know that Jesus said, you're going to deny me three times. I think it's Luke. But when you come back, I always like to note that Jesus had real faith in Peter, that even despite his denial of him, that he would come back. When you come back, strengthen my strength. It's either your brethren or my disciples. I can't remember the way it's phrased exactly. But Yes, Jesus definitely. And then if you go back even earlier, right before the transfiguration in Matthew 16, when Peter makes the good confession of Jesus, that's where Jesus told him, I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom. Right? And so Jesus indicating that he would be one of those preaching the very first gospel sermon. Let's be careful about being too tough on Peter. Yes, a faulty human like all of us. And in so many ways, he's demonstrated such great faith, you know, but he's he had moments of weakness. And often our weaknesses are exposed when what? When things happen that we don't expect. When we've thought it should go a different way, it didn't go that way. And in those moments, our faith gets tested. All right. So as we make the transition, we're not given a whole lot beyond this that night. Really nothing. I do, for a minute, you know, you think about what that night must have been like for our Lord. I just think about how tired he was. It's been a long day. They've been through the Passover. He went through all that. He prayed in the garden. He fully exerted himself in his prayers. He, not on top of that, he has all this anxiety on him. He's endured already a lot. Can you imagine trying to sleep that night? I wonder how much sleep he even got. You ever have a day when you have something going on the next day, how tough it is to go to sleep? Maybe you've got something heavy weighing on you, or maybe it's something exciting. I know you see our young people, when something exciting is happening the next day, sometimes that's the hardest times they have to sleep. In camp, Sunday night, I'm going to be in a cabin full of boys. Oh, I don't know how much sleep I'll get that night, because they're so excited and so wound up. I just wonder how much sleep he got that night. And today's been tough. Tomorrow's going to be even tougher, physically, emotionally, going forward. So we don't have anything that night, but we do know that the very next morning, he will be brought before the full Sanhedrin council. Just real quickly, when we talk about the Sanhedrin, what are we talking about? What is the Sanhedrin, by the way? What's that? It's like the ruling court of the Jews. How many members are on the Sanhedrin? If you are in my Thursday class, you better get this.
What did you say, the ruling what?
The Sanhedrin. They are the ruling class or the ruling board of Jerusalem. Neil, you can't do that. Well, we'll talk about it in 2 weeks. So I'll give you 2 weeks. Research the Sanhedrin. That's who he'll be brought for before first. And then he'll shortly be taken before Pilate, and then all of that series of events will begin. Things will just get a lot more intense. Thank you all. We'll be dismissed and rejoin for our devotional in just a minute. Thank you.